Do not pay attention to the date on top of the page over here. I used a template, and forget about the date. Forget about the date. In case you're wondering, it's not Cheshvan anymore. It is Kislev. I think you have 9 shopping days left till Hanukkah. That I don't know.
No, the Cheshvan.
Okay, so we'll keep this every week if you want. We'll put it up there.
If the age stays the same as
in this week's parasha, which is Vayishlach, we find Yaakov involved in a physical altercation. Vayivater Yaakov levado, vayavek ishimo adalot hashachar. Yaakov is by himself. He is apparently accosted by somebody, and then they wrestle. They go on to wrestle till the break of day. So it could be that that's the kind of thing that men or adolescents or males like to do. They like to hit one another. But that's what we're going to talk about today, is parameters of hitting, or hitting somebody back. And we'll see where it ends up. The Mishnah in Baba Kama, which is the second source, is really talking about 2 cows. If one cow gores another cow, one cow hits another cow, one cow damages another cow. So if a cow damages a cow, then the owner has obligation to pay. But what if the 2 cows get into a fight and each cow damages the other cow? So then it would end up that each cow or each owner of each cow has an obligation to pay for the damages done to the other cow. And then the Mishnah throws in, as an aside, V'chein shnei anashim shechavlu zeh bazeh, also 2 people who damaged one another, mishalmim b'mutar nezek shalem. B'mutar. He would pay the extra money. What does the extra money mean? Rashi writes in the third source, shamin. Shamin means that you, it's like a shamai for an insurance agent today. Shamin means you evaluate. Ma haziko shel zeh, yoter al nezikin shel zeh. You do an evaluation. You come and you look how much the damage is for one and how much the damage is for the other, and then the person who did the more damage would pay the additional damage. Right. So what these sources have told us so far is it's focused on a monetary obligation, and the monetary obligation when somebody hurts somebody else, when somebody hits somebody else. Now, one of the things that I want to be careful about as we go through the sources today, and it's very easy to get confused, it's one of the reasons it's easy to get confused because the sources aren't always clear, and that is to separate between a prohibition versus financial implication, which means, A, am I allowed to hit someone else? That's a yes or no answer. And if I hit somebody else, am I obligated to pay damages? Or
even,
B, or,
even if you can. Or
are there times that I'm perhaps allowed to hit somebody? How would that affect the financial? Or are there times that I'm not obligated to pay, but was I still not allowed to do it? Which means those 2 things don't necessarily go together. For example, if somebody comes over and says to you, go ahead, hit me. Again, you have to be an adolescent male, which lasts at least till 45 to really appreciate this. If somebody comes over and says, hit me, are you allowed to hit him? You say, no, I can't hit you. Why not? It says in the Torah, you can't hit somebody. He says, no, I'm giving you permission to hit me. Or for that matter, is somebody allowed to be a professional boxer?
We have one.
Yeah. Who do we have?
We actually
do have an Orthodox professional boxer, even more than one. But there is one by the name of Yuri Foreman, who won the world championship. And this may be of interest to you, maybe not, but Yuri does listen to these tapes, at least Yuri. Yuri will hear this. So anything you want to say about him? Hi. Somebody's waving at you. And I even told him in advance I'm going to speak a little about boxing, so he's looking forward to hear it. At least so he said. Are you allowed to be professional?
Well,
he claims that boxing is like chess, and the idea is not to get hit. Okay. 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 So are you allowed to be a professional boxer? Well, which, by the way, may be very easy as long as he keeps on boxing non-Jews, and if you can get them to be anti-Semitic, and that would be somewhat easier. And Lo B'Shabbat. Lo B'Shabbat, that's for sure. I mean, in terms of Yaakov, this should be fairly easy. I mean, as far as we know. Again, we don't know the background of this, but as far as you know, Yaakov was accosted, and if he's accosted, are you allowed to hit back? You are allowed to hit back or not? Well, if Yaakov went to any Jewish school, and if he went to any Jewish school, and somebody hits him, and he hits him back, and he gets taken to the principal's office, and the principal says, what happened? He says, he hit me, so I hit him back. So what would the principal then say? What? He'd punish both of them. So now the question is that in line with Jewish law or not? So we'll have to see what Jewish law is. Of course, you can tell me that this is very different over here because potentially Yaakov's life is in danger. Again, we don't know the background. We don't know the exact situation because the whole thing is written in a very, very almost dreamlike quality, but the whole episode is enigmatic. And I think we would all agree, and I didn't even bother bringing any sources to that today, that if Yaakov's life was in danger, so all of us would agree that if somebody's trying to kill you, then you're certainly allowed to have practice self-defense. More than that, if somebody tries to kill somebody else, a third person is allowed to get involved and is obligated to get involved. Again, if it's a case of life and death, that makes it very, very simple and so on. I mean, none of us would say that, I would hope none of us would say that if somebody strikes you on one cheek, then you should turn the other cheek and say, keep on striking, right? We as far as I know, we don't necessarily advocate that position. Correct? You're smiling. You know what? Somebody who works with me told me that last week his wife was attacked in Beit Shemesh. And by the way, it was interesting. It was a Siegel. You know her.
What do you mean by attacked?
Two Arabs. Now, what he didn't tell me, what was in the newspaper, I don't know if you can ever trust the newspaper, but apparently you can, is that she had a three-month-old baby that she was carrying at the time. Now, Miriam, if you know her, happens to be a black belt in various disciplines, and she certainly gave him what for. I mean, they had a mask on, she pulled it down and something over his eyes, and then she grabbed him by the nether regions, and she threw him. And the second one came out of a knife, and she knocked the knife out of the hands. They ended up running away, but she said if she didn't have the baby on her, then she really would have taken care of them properly. So I guess it's always good to have a black belt in kung fu and karate and be experienced experienced in Krav Maga. And you have to feel bad for these guys. They have to pick on the one black belt in kung fu walking around Ramat Beit Shemesh. I mean, talk about having a bad day. Now, I'm sure these guys didn't come home to their wives and oh, you wouldn't believe what happened to me today. And, whatever. Anyway, but in the case of where somebody attacks you in life, none of us would have any problem with this. But I think there are some other questions regarding if somebody, the case that I gave you before, or two cases. One is somebody says, go ahead and hit me. Are you allowed to hit them? Are you allowed to hit them? Is it allowed? Or either way, if it's allowed or not allowed, let's say it's not allowed, but if they say it's okay, are you still obligated to pay damages? That's what I'm saying. These things may be separate considerations. Yes?
What about children?
Well, I'm going to try to stay away from that. You're talking about...
Men, are husbands allowed to hit wives? I mean, what about
the sure, but she should learn kung fu first. there are certain things in terms of Jewish law, what's allowed and what's not allowed. And then you have, I think, sensibilities within society today. And I'll ignore all of your questions. Maybe we'll get to one of them. So we already just saw a source that if you hit, that if two people are fighting, each one has to pay. So that would seem to imply that each one was not allowed to hit the other one, and that would seem to imply that if you do, then you have their financial implications.
There's a lot of things like that. I mean, there's a lot of things where you have one cheshbon, which is, let's say, between you and God, and another cheshbon,
right,
which is societal.
Right, right. I didn't say this is unique. I'm just saying keep in mind that it could be that we'll see a source that would say that, oh, this guy doesn't have to pay, but that doesn't mean that it was mutar. I'm just saying is that you have to keep in mind that there are two things, two separate issues. Okay. And the other thing which is going to hover over this whole topic is to what extent do we own our bodies? And I know that it's... also politically correct to say it's our bodies and we own them and so on and so forth. So this may be real interesting to know what Judaism has to say about this.
Like
you don't care?
Organ
donations or abortions. Look, the attitude towards abortion is that, again, within secular, certainly in the United States, is that it's my body, not me, that is, but it's my body and therefore it's my decision. And the same way, and I'm not being facetious, the same way I can decide if I want my hair longer or shorter, if I want to cut my nails or not, I can decide if I want to keep this baby or not because it's my body and therefore it's my decision. I mean, theoretically, the father, I mean, as far as I know, I'm not that experienced with this, but as far as I know, she needed someone else to help her get into that situation. So maybe the father can say, well, you know, that's my, partially my fetus as well, and therefore I have a right to decide. On the other hand, I can say that, you know what, lady, it's not your body. And God decided that this baby is a tenant within your body, and the tenant has certain rights. As tenants have rights in all kinds of societies, the tenant has rights over here, and you have no right to evict the tenant. So, as I said, I can use all kinds of examples, but I'm saying that issue of who owns the body is also going to be over here in the background, and we'll try to get to that as well. Okay? And what we won't get to, okay, we'll see what we don't get to. Let's continue. In source number 4, which is a long piece of the Gemara, and I can't decide how much of it we want to do, but over here, the Gemara says, HaChovel ba'atzmo, afal pi she'enu rishai, patur. If one damages themselves, even though they're not allowed, they are nonetheless patur. Now, what does it mean, patur? This is... Right, so if we're dealing with the financial damages, that's very funny. So what does it mean on the one hand when it said eino rashai, that you're not allowed to? What does it mean on the other hand that you're patur? If it does mean financial damages, which would be very strange, then I guess it's really obvious that of course you're not going to pay. What are you going to do? You take money out of one pocket and put it in the other pocket? What exactly does that mean? And then the Gemara is going to go through a long... There are couples who don't get along?
There are.
I don't believe
it's hard
that.
To believe. So there have been cases where one spouse will say, I'm not going to work, therefore I don't have to pay support or whatever, don't have to pay whatever. And will go so far as to make themselves ill so that they don't have to support the other. This has happened.
Okay, you're giving me ideas, that's all. That's a different case. But that's a different case because there I'm damaging somebody else, indirectly. But you're focusing on the damage to somebody else. Over here, it's damage to oneself. So it says patur. So the Gemara is going to go through a number. It's going to try to figure out what's going on. It will along the way tell us that there's a machloket about this. So we'll start reading. Hachi ka amar le lo mi bayit boshet da adam rishai levayeshet atzma. What are we talking about? Patur, we're talking about paying for embarrassing. A person's allowed to embarrass themselves. Ela filu chabala, even if you've hurt, made a wound. De ein adam rishai lechabel ba'atzma. A person is not allowed to wound themselves. Acherim shechabel bo chayavin. A person who hurts if somebody else hurts you, then they are obligated. De ein adam rishai lechabel ba'atzma. Now the Gemara asks the question, and a person's not allowed to cause damage to themselves. Again, literally damage over here, chabala, should be a wound. The title HaChovel, it should be a wound, that somebody causes a wound in somebody. The question is, is chabalah, it could also mean damage and not necessarily a wound, so I could mean that it's something a little bit less, but we'll see the case that the Gemara brings up. It says, Vahotanya, we learned in a braita. Now the Gemara is going to introduce another whole aspect to this, and this is the laws of vows. A person can make all kinds of vows where they can damage themselves. For example, Yochel nishba lahara batzmo, v'lo hara ye patur. A person could make a vow, I am going to hurt myself, right? I swear, whatever it is, to, you know, make a proper vow, that I will cut off my hand. So let's say he doesn't do it. So if you make a vow against something in the Torah, right, you make a vow you're going to break a law in the Torah, that vow should not be valid at all.
So how do you explain Yiftach, for example?
He was a fool.
What?
Right. Which means you make a vow, right, you make a vow, of course this, you make a vow, so part of the problem is the vow not valid to begin with, or you still have to do tshuva for that vow that you made that you broke, but you're not allowed to keep it. So the question is, was the vow null and void from the beginning, or is the vow a valid vow, but you can't keep it? And therefore, whatever the laws are, including in breaking vows, that's part of the tension. Over here it says, V'hatanya, we learned in a braita, Yechol nishba lahara ba'atzmo, v'lo hara ye patur. If somebody made a vow they're going to hurt themselves, and they didn't hurt themselves, are they patur, which means, do they have to, are they guilty of making a vow or not? Talmud Lomar, it says, lahara o lahativ. The verse which speaks about making vows says, either you do bad or you do good. So it's lahara lahativ in your vow, ma hatavat rishut, afara rishut, just like you're allowed to make a vow that you can do something good, right? I make a vow, I'm going to take myself away for the weekend to the, what's that spa called? So I had to ask. If a person makes a vow that they're going to go and treat themselves, and they don't, lahatov, says hatov is reshut, just like it's optional, you're allowed to do. So it says that also, therefore, matova reshut, avhara reshut. So therefore, you should also, it should be your option, your prerogative, to also do something bad to yourself, because the Torah said, latov ulahara, good or bad. Avinishpa lahara batzmo v'lahara. That comes to include the case of somebody who vowed that they would hurt themselves and they didn't. Amar Shmuel, ba'ashiv b'ta'anit. No, what's it talking about? Where somebody makes a vow that they are going to fast. I don't know if you've ever fasted, but that's not pleasant. So if somebody brings upon themselves an additional fast, then we're saying that's what it means to make a vow, lahara, to hurt yourself, which becomes very interesting. Or is somebody allowed to take a fast upon themselves? So you all know that there are people who will fast more than they need to, and you know that it must be allowed, but now the question is going to be, so why should that be allowed? Why you're allowed to damage yourself? So the answer is going to end up being that there's some kind of greater good in this, and somehow spiritual purification and bring you closer to God, but we're not exactly sure why that larger issue would be significant. So it says, Beshev B'Ta'anit, we're talking about somebody who sat fasting, Kavata gabe hara'at acherim l'shivim b'ta'anit, acherim imetiv le'b'ta'anita. It says, hold it, but you need a parallel over here. It said, you need a parallel between others doing something to you, and you, because, again, the Gemara over here is hachovil ba'atzmo, or somebody else doing it. So therefore, if the context over here is really fasting, so it says, now how can I do bad to somebody else? Am I doing bad to somebody else? Is making somebody else fast? The Gemara is about to back down, but before it backs down from this, it says, yeah, I can make somebody else. Acherim mi meitiv lo betanita. How can I go make somebody else fast? In, yeah, de mahadik lahu ba'androna. I can lock him up and make sure that he doesn't eat. As I said, the Gemara is working hard right now, but it's going to back down. It says, v'hatanya, but no, what we learned in a braita. Ezu hara'at acherim. What does it mean to hurt someone else? Akeploni v'vtzeat mocho. I'm going to beat somebody and smash their brains in, literally. That's what it means to hurt someone else. So if that's hurting somebody else, so what should it mean when you hurt yourself? It should be, again, it should be parallel. Ela t'naihi, rather, this is an argument among early authorities. Okay, that was the key thing that we had to really get to. This is an argument among early authorities. De'ikamanda omar, eina adam rishai lechvol ba'atzmo. De'ikamanda omar, adam rishai lechvol ba'atzmo. We just now found that there are different opinions. Some say you are not allowed to cause damage to yourself, and another side says you are allowed to cause damage to yourself, which, as far as I'm concerned, this may get to the crux of this issue. do we own our bodies? Do we not own our bodies? And do I have the prerogative to say to somebody, sure, go ahead and hit me? Or can I say to someone else, let's go and practice boxing?
But you could take this, I mean, this has no end.
Well, it's only another six lines.
No, in other words, you could take it to all kinds of things. Every time you go to eat a meal, I'll eat white rice instead of brown rice. I'm not doing the best for my body. And then, I mean, you could go crazy.
Okay, in other words, don't go crazy.
No, but you know what I'm saying?
Just have a good steak.
I could take it to smoking and all that, that's obvious, but to way beyond that.
Right. Next time you go out to eat, have a good steak.
Because it's good for your body.
Because it's good for your body. So murder is wrong. So we're not going to have to go that far in terms of murder. That's going to help us. But part of what we're not going to get into this week is elective surgery.
I was thinking of donating a kidney. Can I vow to donate my kidney?
So again, there's an upside. The upside is you're saving somebody's life. Whenever you have whenever you have an upside to something, so then I can look at it a little differently. What? Cosmetic surgery.
Why? Because it endangers you?
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. I was going to bring in this article. I just saw that somebody in South America died from having surgery on.
Yesterday.
Yeah. So
Miss Argentina.
Miss Argentina died.
Oh yeah.
My husband on the internet, not me.
She.
What about psychological damage?
She made her backside smaller. Or bigger, I don't know. I don't know. Are you allowed to pierce your ears? You skipped all the way to the end. Okay. So let me continue. Correct, piercing your ears, mate. So you're right. So Elaine is correct. So she's pointing at our slippery slope, and where do you begin this and where do you end this? So let me try to limit this to things which are actually damage, which is discernible, hurting oneself, and so on. And I'm not going to get into like how many sifkoni out you're allowed to eat over Hanukkah. I mean that's not as discernible.
We're talking. This seems to address physical damage.
Right. That's what it sounds like.
What about the psychological damage that isn't measured by, a blood or wound or something? I mean, does this apply?
Maybe, but we won't get to this today. Probably when we move over to cosmetic surgery. So it says that we have a difference of opinion.
What parts are you going to link that with?
Just continuation of this. It was originally part of this class, but when I had 35 pages of sources, then I just cut after six and I left the others as a new one. But I was thinking I can do that next week. But Jane wants to leave for Hanukkah, but it has to do with aesthetics, which definitely has to do with Hanukkah. Yeah, so I haven't decided yet. Yeah, it says Yosef was beautiful, but what if he really wasn't and needed a little help? So maybe there. So let's continue. So over here we found that there's a difference of opinion whether you're allowed to do damage to yourself or not allowed to damage yourself. And then it does go into murder, and it does go into taking one's life, and so on. So I don't think that we really need to go that much further within this source. At the very end, it does speak about pain that one can do to oneself. It includes like the Nazir, who doesn't drink wine, then has to bring a korban for that, as to apologize for the pleasure that he couldn't have had, which it says that's a sinner, and therefore it's really going back to this idea of fasting or of hurting your body in that way. But as I said, the main thing I want you to see is that there was this tension over here. There were these two sources. The Rambam writes in source number 5, and this is a very important source. He writes, Asur la'adam lachbol bein ba'atzmo bein b'chaveiro. Okay, so that should be pretty clear. A person is not allowed to do damage either to themselves or to their fellow man. You are not allowed to hurt yourself. You're not allowed to hurt others. So was that pretty clear and pretty black and white? V'lo'achovil bilvad, not only are we talking about doing damage, elakol hamakeh adam kasher mi Yisrael, ben katan, ben gadol, ben ish, ben isha, derech nitzayon. So that word is underlined in my, I know it's not in yours, because I underlined that here. What does derech nitzayon mean? Right? Quarreling, right? We see this by remember Moshe, we have the word used over there, right? Derech nitzayon, hareza over below taase. So he says very clearly that you break a negative law of the Torah if people hit one another in confrontation. Now, when it says in confrontation, that does leave open a question mark. What happens when it's not in confrontation? So does it mean that you're not allowed to do it anyway? And why would I argue that? Because it says, asur l'adam l'chol bein, right? But when are you guilty in terms of the lo ta'ase? When you're upset with somebody. Or I can say that no, the Rambam is qualifying it over here and saying, but if it's not out of, you know, anger, then it is allowed. So I'm just saying is that you can read this in two different ways. Yeah, do you see that or no? Should I say this again? Okay. We didn't get to the children yet. We'll get to the end in a second. We'll get to the end in a second. We'll read it to the end. We'll read it. You know what? Let's read this thing to the end, and then we'll decide how to understand this first clause. Okay? Hareza over below tase. Shenemar lo yosif lahakoto. You're not allowed to give him any more hits. You know, what's the context there? Person who was guilty of makot, you give them 39 makot, but you can't give them one more. You give them a 40th one here. Here's one for good measure, or one for next year, or whatever it is. So then what happened? You just broke a command of the Torah, which means the Torah's commandment is talking about hitting somebody who's wicked, who deserves to be hit, but hitting him one iota more than the law mandates, you've broken the law. Certainly, the Rambam would argue, if you hit somebody who is undeserving of being hit, so then you would be breaking a Torah law by hitting them. He says, "Im hizhira Torah shelo losif makata chote, kal v'chomer l'maka etzat tzadik." If you're not allowed to hit somebody who's wicked, then certainly you're not the sinner. Then certainly you can't hit somebody who is a tzadik. And now I'll go back and ask you again about that first line. The Rambam writes, "Asur l'adam l'chol bein ba'atzmo bein mechaviro." A person is not allowed to hit someone, including themselves. And then he says, but if somebody does it, derech nitzayon, then he's guilty of this lo tase. So when he says that, is he telling you that you're not allowed to hit in any circumstance, even if it's not derech nitzayon? Or is he telling us that the only time that you're guilty if it is derech nitzayon? Am I not clear enough? Okay. Is the Rambam qualifying that the whole law is only if it's derech nitzayon, and therefore if it's not derech nitzayon, it's mutar legamre, it's completely allowed? Or is the Rambam telling us that when it's derech nitzayon, then you broke the lo ta'aseh from the Torah, but it's not allowed in any circumstance?
It sounds like there's two instances. If it's allowed, like say a man will give his wife a divorce and you can beat him up till he says yes, whatever. If you go overboard, it's not okay. And if you're
I'm really looking at this in terms of other possible situations, and let's go back and say that it's not derech nitzayon, but it's two people, let's say, are boxing, and it's not anger at all, but they're practicing one another. And one says, "Listen, I need a sparring partner, and there's no anger at all, and we're gonna practice."
So, is there a difference?
Just 1 second. So over here, there's no anger. Therefore, it's not the lo tase, but is it allowed or is it not allowed? Which means, what is the Rambam leaving open by that door? Is he telling you that you don't break the Torah law, but you still can't do it? Or, no, if it's not derech nitzayon, if it's not really quarreling, then it's allowed, then it's mutar. Okay?
Is there a difference? You're not distinguishing between maket and chovel.
Right.
So, when you have, for example, four sons, who think that beating one another blue is playing.
Right.
And they say we're playing and everything's fine until you actually have somebody bleeding. So
then it's fine.
No.
But there's a difference between Maquet and Chauvel.
No.
Once the bleeding stage hits, then the game is over, and so then you're not only... So then you're chayav, meaning then you've actually done the wrong thing. But
no.
Up to that point, they think that...
No, no. Generally what happens is the one who's stronger thinks they're playing. And the one who's weaker is screaming bloody murder.
The one who's weaker has to defend himself by creating the blood situation on the stronger.
Okay, you know what? We'll take this home afterwards.
But there's no distinction between Maquet and Chauvel. For the same reason, I think you could line that up along the Asur and then the Lodam.
Right. Good, no, that's a good point. Because Asur Ladam Lechavol, you can't do damage, but hitting is when it's
when you actually do the damage, you're over the Lotas there. But until that
right.
point, it's just Asur.
Right. But again, the Rambam is unclear over here. And right.
Every
right.
Sport
right.
involves injury.
Right.
No, but
boxing
is hitting.
Hockey. Well, hockey, the pucks go in their thing. Football, they tackle each
other, and basketball, they. Well, Yuri, if I'll quote him now, did say that that football is far more
damaging
than boxing is.
But the action isn't necessarily hitting.
Who was it who said it wasn't Rodney Dangerfield? It was the other one. Who said I went to a hockey? I went to a boxing match and a hockey game broke out. It was Don Rickles. That was Don Rickles. Okay, so till now, again, we still have our question in terms of owning the body. Our first source told us that you're not that if two people hit one another, then each one has to pay the damages of the other. From our second source, we got the conclusion that you can't hit, right? Question was still, do you own your body or not own your body, which we have as an open question. The Rambam is not 100% clear, but it sounds like you can't hit, and you certainly can't do damage, and if you do, then you have responsibility. And then we get to the Rush in source number 6. And the Rush will be significant. The Rush is going back to the first Gemara that we quoted. Shnei shorim shvarim, two cows, tamin shechabluze bezeh mishalmim b'mutar chatzi nezek. Right, two cows, if they damage one another, each one has to pay the other. So therefore, when you end up figuring it out, if one damaged $50, one damaged $75, one pays the other $25, then you figure out what the difference between the two damages was. Venerally, the Rush says, it seems to me, demairi, that we're talking about a case, shidchilu bevat achat. The Rush also had a bunch of sons. The Rush said, he said, here we're talking about a case where they both started at the exact same time. Oh, Chaval Hasheni Gam B'Rishon La'Acher's Man, or the second one came back looking for the first one a little bit later on. Aval Ima Echad Hitchil, but if one started, Hamatchil Mishalem Nezek V'Hasheni Patur, the one who started has to pay, and the one who beat him back is Patur. By the way, he's talking about cows right now. Dekola Mishnah. Let me just skip a little bit to the bottom. Aval hacha yesh reshut l'sheni l'chbol b'rishon kiven shetchil bo. But the second one has a right to hit the first because the other guy started. Da'afilu ba'adam, so now he's telling us this is not just by cows, and certainly he says it even by people. It le reshut l'sheni. The second one has the right. V'kein shnei anashim nami mari shetchilu ke'achat. And the case of the two people, you have to pay the extras when they both started at the same time. O acher zman, or one came back looking for the one later on. Aval im hitchil ha'echad, hasheni patur. If somebody started with you, and you hit them back, then you're allowed to. Which means the Rush now is changing self-defense. We all knew, as I said, before we started, we all knew that if somebody comes and attacks you and wants to kill you, you are allowed to kill them. Not only that, you're allowed to take a preemptive strike. How do you know that? Habala harcha. Right? Somebody comes, you're allowed to take a preemptive strike because they want to kill you. What if they don't want to kill you, they just want to hit you?
How do you know?
They hit you. They just hit you. Just one second. Somebody just hit you. Are you? And they're not trying to kill you, right? Are you allowed to hit them back? So the Rush said, yes, you are allowed to hit them back. Let's continue. The Beit Yosef in source number 8, Shnaim Shechablu Zeh Bezeh, im chaval ha'echad b'chaviro yoter mima shechaval bohu mishalim lo b'motor nezek shalem. Mishnah, perikum and miniach. That's the Mishnah that we learned already. He then goes, umasha katov b'shem harash, that the Tor quoted his father, the Rush, v'dafka shedchilu shneim ke'echad. Right? And so on. Okay. Source number 9. Yes. I'm sorry. He just said exactly what the Rush just now said. He just quotes the Rush. I read that, you'll see in a second. He quotes the Rush over here. The Beit Yosef quotes the Rush as saying that that when are you obligated to pay if they both hit at the same time? But if one protects himself when the other attacks him, then he has no monetary obligation. Source number 9 is the Shulchan Aruch. So again, this is Jewish law. Shnayim shechablu zeh bezeh, if two people hit one another, im chibel ha'echad b'chaviro yitur mima shehu chibel bohu, meshalim lo b'motar nezek shalem. You have to pay the difference in the damages done.
So it doesn't matter who started.
V'dafka shetchil shneim ke'echad. And he writes, this is halacha, he follows the Rush. The Rambam had no mention of this. The Beit Yosef and the Shulchan Aruch, Jewish law, follows the Rush, and he says that's only talking about if the two of them start at the same time. Or the other guy came back a little bit while later and hit the guy back. Which means it's no longer self-defense. If one started a fight, hasheni patur, the second one has no monetary obligations. Sheyesh lo rishut. See, when he said patur, I could have thought that he's patur, but maybe he still did something which was morally wrong. Again, the difference between the monetary issue and the moral issue. But then he continues and he says, Sheyesh lo rishut l'sheni l'chbobo kidei l'hatzil atzmo. The second one has a right to hit the first one in order to protect himself. My wife has never let me go to any assistant principal and open up the Shulchan Aruch when any of our sons were sent home for fighting and say, why don't you at least look into the case and who hit first? That's what the Jewish law is. And I presume that most schools just say, if you fight, then we'll send no tolerance of violence. But I am pointing out that it's against Jewish law. But see, the larger issue is also, and I'm not going to solve this. You're all probably far more success parenting than I do. But the question also is, what do you tell a child? And there are some children who become victims, and if they would hit back one time, then that would probably solve the situation. And I'm saying, I mean, it's very clear that Jewish law allows them to do that. And so the question is it a wise thing to do or not a wise thing to do? I don't remember exactly how old he was, but my oldest son, who's now will be 22 in a couple of weeks, when he must have been around 7 or 8, and we got him a bicycle. And he went to the street with his younger brothers, and a group of kids who were all older came over and said, can we try the bicycle? Now, where I come from in Brooklyn, if somebody tries the bicycle, you never see the bicycle again, right? No question. So these are kids he didn't know. These kids, whatever, came and they wanted to try his bicycle. So he gets off the bicycle, gives it to his younger brother to hold, goes over to the biggest kid, hits him in the head. All the kids run away. And the other kids come running home saying, telling me what happened. I go up and all the kids are away and he's there with his bicycle. And then, so one of the other fathers came afterwards. You know, your son picked on my kid. And I don't know. I asked him, what would you do in the same situation? So he didn't have anything to say. But I didn't know afterwards if I should tell him, you know, wow, that's the right thing that you did. Or say, well, that's a terrible thing that you did. So as I said, you can all decide for yourselves, but no one ever took a bicycle away from this kid. And he's not a violent, you know, person. Excuse me? Generally.
That's what you were saying before, the more powerful one,
mm-hmm.
Which doesn't, I'm not commenting on, you know, the situation you just...
Would you have defended him?
No, I'm saying the more powerful one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So does that make it right? Does it make the issue right or wrong?
Look, as I said again, Jewish law says you are allowed to defend yourself. If defending yourself, by the way, there are more cases here, so don't stop yet.
Defending yourself
Next line. V'chein hu le'enyin gidufim. If somebody starts to curse you out. Ubi yushim, and to embarrass you. Ha'medchil porei ha'knas. The first one has to pay knas. And he says, you're allowed to curse them back.
Oh, but you can't hit somebody who curses you.
We'll say that also. You're allowed to
curse? Only curse, you can't hit them.
You're allowed to curse them back. If somebody starts cursing, right, you're driving and somebody says, hey, it's a chamor, right? So you can get up and say, atoch. Okay, I'm not going to say what you can say. Naomi will tell you afterwards. He says you're allowed to protect yourself and protect.
Doesn't
it make a question? One second. Are you surprised, before you ask me, are you surprised that it says this over here?
Yes.
Okay. So.
Common sense.
Right. So, but in this instance. Good, but in this instance, common sense is written in the Shulchan Aruch, just in case there are people here that think, you know, according to Jewish law, you're allowed to curse somebody out. Yes, if they curse you out, you're allowed to curse them back. And again, over there, here the important thing is, one important thing is, and what is that? You're allowed to defend yourself. As long as you are defending yourself, it's allowed. When you go past defending yourself, then it's no longer allowed. Okay? So therefore... What we are allowed to do, again, how we want to respond to certain situations, you know, we have to decide. Sometimes somebody curses you, curse them, next thing you know, they pull out a knife. So maybe it's a very silly thing to do. That's why.
Right.
So again, I'm not. Yeah.
You're saying that this is how we should teach our children. If they come home and said, this girl made fun of me, should you say, we'll make fun of her back? It's in the Shulchan Aruch that will be.
They are allowed. You can tell them they are allowed to make fun of them back, if that's what they think will solve the situation. Sometimes that is the right thing to do.
I didn't hear what'll solve the situation. Solving the situation is very different than matching someone else's.
But I'm saying you are allowed to defend yourself, right? If that's what the kid needs to defend themselves, they are allowed to do this. And yes, this is within the rights within Jewish law. Yes. Because it may stop them from continuing.
I think it just
that's what I'm saying. It depends on the situation, and that's why you have to judge it. And therefore, if you're afraid that this will cause a situation to escalate, then it may be a very silly thing to do. If you think that saying something can stop them in their tracks, then it may be the proper thing to do. So again, over here, it's not saying that you're obligated to curse somebody back. I said that you are permitted to if you think that that's how you can defend yourself. As I said, I'm not going there.
If you make it much bigger, if you look at it as a national, as a country, if, you know, in the United Nations, there's 10, you know, speakers who get up and say horrific things about Israel and about the army. Are you within your rights to say things back? Are you within your rights to say, well, look at Darfur and look at this and look at that?
Of course, you are.
We're defending ourselves and also to explain.
Before you all tell me, one second. Okay, I want to say one thing. I am not giving instructions on how to parent your children. And if I would, then I would charge you a lot more money for this. Because, yes.
I just want to give an example. 2 years ago, I was a teacher. I retired. And I was teaching in class, like a day before, they washed all the tables, the desks, everything was clean. And one of my pupils was sitting with that white,
Whiteout.
And she was scribbling on the whole desk, you know. And I walked over to her. I took it off and I put it on her pants.
I would have made her wash it.
I took it off and I put it on her pants and she went ballistic. And she, of course,
is this why you retired, or?
I came to the point where I couldn't take any crap anymore. Anyway, so that was the reason I was teaching for many years.
Yeah.
And she went ballistic. She went ballistic, and I said to her, "You're angry, aren't you?" She says, "You bet." I said, "Yesterday, kids were cleaning this, and they bought stuff. They bought detergent, whatever. And you went and you destroyed it. And think how they feel about it. You feel bad. They feel bad about it, too. Anyway, I knew, knowing Israeli mothers, I knew that she would probably, her mother would call me Sada Chinuch and blah, blah, blah. And anyway, so there's a reason why I'm telling you the story. And
do you know the reason?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, I called the mother first.
Uh-huh.
I knew it was like a
right.
complete empty.
Right.
I called the mother to complain about her daughter, what she did.
Right.
And then she said, yeah, but look what you did. I said to her, I have no problem paying for another pair of pants, slacks. I mean, if you pay, it's new. And she said, it was new. I said, 100, 200, 300. I'm willing to pay even 500 shekel, I said to her, for a new pair. But your daughter has to understand that when she destroys something, it will come back to her. And I want to tell you something that even though it seemed like so uneducational, and I'm seeing it right here, she came over to me later, a day or two later, and she says,
okay.
Okay. I mean, you have to, you know, sometimes you say it's not educational, sometimes you say it's not politically correct, but sometimes you have to do it in order to teach them a lesson. So.
Yes.
Yeah. So are you,
no,
if you conclude that you're allowed to defend yourself,
yeah.
but not one bit more,
mm-hmm.
then are you halakhically not allowed, in other words, is it an avera to egg someone on and you're defending yourself, in other words, to raise the bar?
It's probably a really dumb thing to do.
No, it's not a question of a dumb thing to do. In other words, are you... I mean, I'm wondering about, okay, so the guy who
Can we read a couple lines later? Let's read a couple lines later and then see. Where it's underlined in the middle, it says, Umihu, Tzarech Umed. Umed means to really, to judge something very carefully. I have to translate Umed. Assess. Very carefully. Im hayyachol lahatzil atzmo b'chabala mu'etet, v'chabo harbe chayav. If you were able to do something less, you did something more, then you are, then you're chayav. You're chayav financially, you're chayav in terms of morally.
Disproportional use.
Right, disproportional response. Qualifies a little bit more. At the very end over here, v'chein hadin ba'adam haro'e echad miYisrael makah chavero. Also, if you see one Jew hitting another Jew, v'einu yachol lahatzilo, im lo shiyakeh hamakeh. And the only way of protecting the victim is by beating up the instigator. Yechol lahakoto, you're allowed to hit him. And then he adds, kidei la'afrisho mi'isura, which is such an interesting rationale. You're allowed to save him to prevent him from doing something which he's not allowed to do. He didn't say you're allowed to hit him to save the victim, which is what he should have said, right? He says the reason you can save him because you're saving this guy from sinning. And then the Ramah adds, this was not underlined, but since some of you asked, v'chein mishahu tachat rishuto, somebody who's under your tutelage, which could be a child, could be a student, could be other situations, v'oreh bo shehu ase davar avera, and you see him doing something which is sinful, rishai lahakoto uliyasro kadei lahafrisho mi'isur. You're allowed to hit them in order to cause them distress, in order to stop them from doing something which they're not allowed to do. Don't you wish you learned this before? Ve'ein tzarich laviyo lebeitin, and you don't have to bring them to court in order to get permission to do such a thing. You're allowed to prevent somebody from doing something which is wrong. Now, again, how and when somebody utilizes this, I think needs to be done with a great deal of wisdom. Again, I am not telling you to go out and start beating people up. But if you want the lady's phone number for the kung fu lessons, let me know. I'm not telling you that that's what you should do. But what I am bringing up is in terms of our rights and sometimes obligations, are we allowed to defend ourselves? So Jewish law says yes, you're allowed to defend yourselves. So now you're going to ask me, so are we allowed to teach our children that they're allowed to defend themselves? So what should the answer to that be?
Yes,
we're allowed to. Yes. And now, does it take some sophistication to say how you defend and when it's considered to be proper and when not? Yes, and that's part of parenting as well. I'm not going to say anything else about parenting because everyone knows that I know nothing about this. We'll have to deal with that separately.
No, but here it's connection with Kaviro and not Tina. Does that make a difference?
That's interesting. That's why it's interesting. Meaning there were two leaps over here. One leap that it's somebody else, another leap is that even to prevent somebody from sinning is that's the rationale. Again, that wasn't a mistake. The Rama picked up on that and said that to separate him from sin, and therefore he just extends this whole law in what I think is an interesting way. Yeah. Yeah. right? Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, correct. They can use this law and say that that's why we need to protest on Shabbat. And so, again, but even when you protest, you need to do things which are proportionate and be smart in terms of what is going to be the response. There's a whole other issue, which is why they respond the way they do, which there's a whole other issue which I don't want to get into right now. There's a real interesting article written in this book called La'or HaHalacha. La'or HaHalacha is written years and years ago by Rav Zevin, Shlomo Yosef Zevin. Do you know who he was?
Guy the street in the
back. Yeah. Well, before he was a street, Rav Zevin was one of the really great Tamidei Chachamim. He was an old-time Chabad follower, which I don't know what his relationship, what the newer or the most latest Rebbe was, but he was very prolific. And this particular book is called La'or HaLacha, which is essays on various points in Halacha. One of the things that he worked on was a book which is called the Encyclopedia Talmudit, which is just about any topic, as far as they've gotten so far, any topic, there's a full research has been done. You can look this up. It's invaluable. He's the one who was the editor of it. So these essays over here are essays which are similar to that, but here they're a little bit more fleshed out. He has, as I said, numerous books. Over here, I think it's the second to last chapter and the last chapter, he wrote a chapter called Mishpat Shylock Lefi HaHalacha. Okay? What would have happened if Shylock was supposed to get a pound of flesh, if that would have stood in front of a Beit Din? You all have heard of Shylock? Am I the only one? Okay. I'm the only one who can truly say I learned about the Merchant of Venice from Rav Zevin. No, I'm just saying it. Anyway, and part of the issue is to what extent does a person have a right to do that? So he brings a lot of the sources which are relevant. One of the sources that he loved, and the truth is, the first time I had seen this years ago was when I was skimming through this article, and he loved this source, and you'll see why in a second. First of all, as being a good, true Lubavitcher, he's quoting from the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. The first Lubavitcher Rebbe is known as the Shulchan Aruch Harav. This is source 14. 14, I think. He goes through some of the normal cases. Asur l'adam l'hakot et chaveiro. You're not allowed to hit somebody. If you did hit him, then he broke the law, which is almost the Rambam word for word. Even if you lift your hand towards your friend, you consider to be somebody who's wicked. He goes through damages. In the middle of the beginning of 14 of Halacha Aleph, he writes, "V'kol ha'mirim yado b'chavir l'koteo afapi shelo hikehu nikra rasha." If you lift your hand, even if you don't hit him, just lifting your hand, you're considered a rasha. And then the next paragraph, he writes, "V'chol mishike chaviro harehu muhram." If you do violence and you hit somebody, you are in cherem. You are excommunicated. V'omin b'cherem ha'kadmonim, which means the early rabbis put in ve'ein letzarfu l'minyan. Asara, l'chol devar shebekdusha. Can't count him for a minion. Okay, so he's pretty strong in terms of attacking people. He thinks that this is terrible. Second halacha, v'amaket chaviro hakak hala, she'en b'shev pruta, hove'en b'chayev makot, mamon chayev makot min ha'Torah. If you hit somebody and there was no damage or is very little, then you chayev makot. Because he seems to say the punishment is that you pay back the money if there's a significant amount of money. No significant amount of money, then it's considered to be that you broke a lav she'en bo ma'aseh, because you did no ma'aseh, you did no action, and you get makot, which is a technical thing. Just, I know. I mean, but that is nonetheless the law. V'yafilu im chaveiro hitchili mo b'meriva v'cherfo b'dvarim v'afilu hako v'hu shepasak l'hakoto. Even if your friend started and he stopped. Avol im lo pasak rashay l'hakot oto kedei latzil atzmo. So he doesn't go against the Shulchan Aruch. even though you saw he was a little strict before, but he does include this thing of self-defense. Okay. And again, so he gives this limiting thing. But what's really interesting is the next halacha. Source 15. Because here he makes a value judgment. Asur lahakot et chavero, afilu hu noten lo rishut lahakoto. You're not allowed to hit someone else, even if he gives you permission to hit him. So, source 15. Ki ein la'adam rishut al gufo klal. So he just added in something which no one else added. What did he say? Because you have no ownership over your body. So as far as that question that we brought up in the beginning, here the Shulchan Aruch Rav does make a value judgment and says, you do not own your body. Because you do not own your body, you have no permission to say to somebody, go ahead and hit me. You can't. You have no permission. Right? La'koto v'lo l'vaisho v'lo l'tzaro b'shum tzar. Afilu b'mniyat ezem achalo mishteh, elitim ken asa b'derech tshuva. You're not allowed to even withhold food from yourself unless you're doing it, I guess for health would count as well. Shetzar zo tovahilo, latzil nafshom, right, and so on. Ulechein mutar lanot l'tshuva, afilu misha enu cholotanot, misha cholotanot mutar. So he goes, you're not allowed to damage yourself in any way whatsoever because it's not your body. So he's very, very clear on that. On the other hand, here is a source which, as far as I can tell, Rav Zevin missed, which has the exact opposite conclusion. And it's in source 11. This is the Aruch HaShulchan. V'chein shnayim shenit avku yachad birit sonam. Also a case. Right. Also a case where two people are struggling or wrestling. V'echad hi pilat chaveiro la'aretz, and one of them throws his friend to the ground, v'nafal, v'nismet eino, and he hurts, damages his eye, patur, hamazik, she'ein ze onis legabi hamazik, mikol makom, arei nizuk yorayt amanakein, she'ken derech hamit avkim, v'adayt edahachi, netavku yachad, u'machlu ze leze. He says that if two people are wrestling, and they both agreed that they want to be involved in this physical activity, and it could be wrestling, boxing, or whatever else you want, and one of them gets hurt, he says that this is allowed. It's pretty sure it's allowed. He certainly deals with the monetary issues. He says they don't, because they were mochel. Each one was mochel. So now, according to the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, you have no right to be mochel over here. And again, unless you're going to argue that this is just monetary, but it's not the way that it sounds at all. I don't know exactly what that means, but I don't know what it means that they agree. Over here he's saying, and this is what's really special about this source, is that I think this is the exact opposite of what we saw in the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. He's saying that a person does have the right to say, come, let's box a few rounds together, or even the more so, if you sign a contract and make money on it, and each side says, great, this is wonderful, this is an opportunity. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, and even one gets hurt, you have no responsibility. Even if one gets hurt, you have no responsibility, because each one was mochel. How do you say mochel? They waived their. So as I said, this certainly goes. And he says, and it's not like the case. It's not like another case that he's going to bring up. Do you know like katad yadi? If he says to somebody, cut off my hand, v'kata, and he cut it off, t'chayav, then you have to pay. L'fisha ena demochel al nezech gufo. Because the person didn't really mean it. Meaning, he's saying the problem over here is with sincerity. The person who says, go ahead, cut off my hand, wasn't sincere when he said it, and therefore you're obligated. But then when the person says, come, let's box, then he is sincere, and that's the reason that it would be allowed. Avamasha asush name beratzon viyadusha yadei hitapkut behechrach shachad yapil et chaviro. But regarding wrestling, this goes back to Yaakov and his adversary. He says, if the two of them agree, and you know that when you're wrestling with, this is like Greek-Roman wrestling, and you know that one will throw the others to the ground, Of course that's going to happen. That's why they did. But nonetheless, the machlus elazeh, each one forgave the other one, and that they agreed to get into the situation. So as I said, the Aruch HaShulchan seems to me very clear that he allows this. Later on in Source 13, he says, Ha'omi l'chavira katat yadi samat eteni amunat shata patur. Go ahead, cut off my hand, you know, take out my eye, and you'll be patur. V'asakin mikol makom chayav b'kol chamishat dvarim. All the various damages that one has to pay according to Jewish law. Shadavar yadua she'ein adam rotze b'kach ulushchok nitkaven. Because it's well known, he couldn't have meant this, and he was just kidding. Where this will lead us in terms of elective surgery as well, because elective surgery, I would say, he's not joking around. He says, go ahead, cut something. Right? He's serious, and he signs a waiver on this, and he is mochel mirosh. The Aruch HaShulchan would be a real good source when we go in that direction. There are two more people who... No, you do. No, as far as I know, no one else did. Source number 10 is the Minchat Chinuch. Now, he brings another element into this. What if one's parent said to them, go ahead and hit me or damage? Or, again, let's say that you're a dentist and your parent says, go ahead and take out fix that cavity, which really would end up being the same thing. Is a child allowed to do, bless you, damage to their parent? Or in the case of the Gemara, which are two different cases come up, one is taking out a splinter, and taking out the splinter could cause bleeding, and the other case is bloodletting. Bloodletting.
No, I have a case at work where someone was saying that she's not allowed to something to her mother who's a Sufi patient because...
Okay, so we'll see that this becomes a very nice machloket. This becomes a very very interesting machloket. The Minchat Chinuch writes near l'niatati. It seems according to me, d'zeshachayav Torah b'makel avivumimo o b'chaviro, and you just threw it together. That which the Torah says that you're guilty if you hit your parents or if you hit a fellow Jew, haynu dafka below reshut. That's only when they didn't give you permission. But if your parent or friend says, hit me, or for that matter, curse, there is no prohibition. Which means he also seems to weigh in, like the Aruch HaShulchan, that if a person is mochel, a person says it's fine, then in fact it's fine. The Einu Chayav b'malkot v'lo b'mita, and then you would not be obligated either in terms of punishment or death. And he goes back and he brings the Gemara. Right. I know. Aval maka ein kan avera klal. But if one hits with permission, there is no sin whatsoever. Lo b'chavero, v'lo ba'av v'ein. U'mash demuvar kan b'shas, diboy le'inyin lakiz dam. And that which the Gemara said, you know, is a child allowed to let blood of their parents, hainu shelo b'mratzon aviv, that's when the father doesn't want it. Nonetheless, the Gemara says that he's patur. He's not chayav, he's patur, which means it's the wrong thing to do, but it's not this terrible thing of a person who hit their parents. Why not? Because the child did it for the parents' intention. Which means, when are you not allowed to do it but still patur if the parents didn't want it? But the Minchat Chinuch is going on to say, but what if the parent asks the child, please do this. I need you to take some blood for me, whatever the case is. The Minchat Chinuch continues and says, "Aval im aviv mochel umitzaveh lahakoto near the einu chayav klal v'chein v'chaviro v'einu ver klal v'afal pi shalom atzati zebi mufurash." He writes, even though I can't find anybody else who says this, mikol makam hasfara notenit kain nearly laniyata ati barur. He goes, it's logic, because this just is logical to me, and that if you're doing it for your parents, because what's the problem? The problem what's the problem is honoring your parents. What if honoring your parents is to help them in this way? So, right. So now it's interesting, because I could have made the distinction between kibud avaim, there I have to honor my parents, versus the Torah says don't hit your parents, and that's absolute. And I could have said not hitting him is an absolute law, and it doesn't make a difference if they tell me to hit them. And what happens then? What happens if my parents tell me to break a law of the Torah, break Shabbat? So what? I don't break Shabbat. So what if they tell me to hit me? So I can say the same thing. That goes against the Torah. So even though the Minchat Chinuch says this is a svara and this is logical, this is my conclusion, one can very easily argue with this conclusion. There's one more source that again weighs in on the same topic, and that's the Truri Evin in source 16, which is very unclear. So I'm not going to read it inside, but you have in front of you. He ends up bringing up the same question as the Minchat Chinuch, and he draws a distinction between parents versus others, which means he says if your parents ask you to hit them, then you can't do it, because that's absolute. But if somebody else asks you to do it, then they can do it, which means as far as the issue of who owns the body, the Truri Evin would seem to agree with, I'm not doing this too quick, right? The Truri Evin would agree with the Aruch HaShulchan, that you do own your body, and therefore you can tell someone that they can hit you. But when it comes to parents, then there's this whole special law of Makeh Aviv Imo, and therefore he says, even if the parents say, you still can't do it, it's not a question of them owning their body, but it's a question that a child can't do that kind of damage to the parents. The Minchat Chinuch is now, we realize, he's the most radical, because what did he say? He said that not only are you allowed to do damage to somebody else if they ask, again, even your parents you could, because that's what they ask, so therefore that becomes de facto honor, and as I said, the Minchat Chinuch really is radical. What did we see from the Shulchan Aruch HaRav? All the way on the other side, what would he say? I mean, certainly you can't hit parents, and certainly you can't hit, he said you can't hit anybody because they don't own their body. So therefore, they have no right to tell you, go ahead and hit me, and you don't have to pay me. It means the most that they could be mochel, he doesn't even say this, as far as I could tell, the most that they could be mochel is they could say, fine, don't pay me. But as far as the moral thing, are you allowed to hit somebody, he would say no.
I don't know why you're saying hit and dentistry. Like, why are you saying
that? You've been to the dentist?
No, but there's a lot of common sense in that. What if something goes wrong and they get an infection and they die?
Okay,
what if
they
do a surgery?
That's an accident. Okay, hit somebody because you're boxing.
Right. So what you're pointing out is that this is a Chabalah. What is Chabalah? Technically defined Chabalah is if you do a wound, you draw blood. That is a Chabalah. So why would I call dentistry Chabalah? Because that's what it is. Now you could say, but it's Chabalah with an asterisk because this is a good thing.
Then boxing might not draw blood.
Right.
You could just get bruised and break bones.
Right.
It's not Chabalah.
So it's potentially not. But there's another problem. Again, that was the difference between Makeh Aviv Imo. But certainly, if one draws a Chabalah, so again, it comes down to the...
He says, if your parents ask you to hurt them, you're allowed to, and you're not over allowed. But he doesn't say that you have to.
It sounds like he's leaning towards you have to. I'm going to do two more things and we'll stop. One is on page 5, Sif Yud Tet, which was further on in the Aruch HaShulchan. He says, Katav HaMaharshal, Yud Tet. Katav Maharshal imachad chiref et chaviro b'shem ra v'chazar ze v'hakohu af shavar b'lav et tzarech kapara mikom makom ein alav din rasha. Somebody curses you out, and you turn around and you punch him in the head. He says it's wrong, but you're not a rasha. I mean, this whole thing of you're a rasha and you're in chayrim and so on. He says anything which is in the heat of the moment does not make you into a wicked person. The heat of the moment, it may have been bad judgment, and the Aruch HaShulchan continues along those lines. If you already saw the English over here, this is a story which is well known that Rav Lichtenstein told during his eulogy for Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and he's talking about Rav Shlomo Zalman's great sensitivity and his greatness as a posek, and ever since Rav Lichtenstein moved to Eretz Yisrael, Rav Shlomo Zalman was his primary posek that he would go to and talk to him about things of halacha. And when his eldest daughter, Esti, got close to bat mitzvah, she wanted to pierce her ears. And Rav Lichtenstein was always very concerned that maybe it's a chabura, and maybe you're not allowed to do this to yourself. And he was taking the more stringent approach, like we saw in the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, a person can't do damage to themselves. And we saw already in the Gemara that there were two approaches to this. Some say you can, some say you can. It says maybe. So they decided that the proper chinuch over here would be is that he'll take her and say, we'll go to the posek, we'll go to Rav Shlomo Zalman. So she's a little before her bat mitzvah, and they go together, Rav Shlomo Zalman. And Rav Shlomo Zalman says, what's the matter? And says, my daughter has a question. She's almost bat mitzvah, and we never let her pierce her ears because, you know, Chabalah, and we're concerned. And and Rav Shlomo Zalman just waves him off. And again, if you want to see, this is Rav Aviner being quoted in a tshuva. Somebody asked Rav Aviner if somebody's allowed to have the ears pierced, questions pierced, have the ears pierced, what's the difference between today's between earrings and one's ears and earrings in other places of the body. So Rav Avinir quotes the Maharik, so Rabishan of non-Jews is a whole nother, right? An earring is usually placed like an ear is, as usual place in the ear is permissible. An earring in an unusual place which draws attention of others is forbidden. I'm not convinced at all that he's right. It's related in the book, Va'alehu lo yibol, that the daughter of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein wanted to get her ear pierced, but her father was uncomfortable with the idea. They agreed that they would go and ask for Shlomo Zalman. When they asked him, Shlomo Zalman said, "What is your question? By us, we give the boys a Brit Milah, we pierce the girls' ears," which is also a very interesting parallel. But over here, we have the beginning of a Chabalah for cosmetic purposes, and I do want to look at it that way. And then we will, B'lin Adr, continue with cosmetic surgery. Just one more second. The conclusion. If you want to be a professional boxer and you follow the Aruch HaShulchan, there's certainly nothing to talk about. There's no problem. If you follow the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, then you would have more of a problem in this. But again, as we saw from the beginning of the Gemara, that there's machloket in this, and we see that machloket goes all the way down to 20th century, 21st century sources. Shabbat Shalom.